Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm your host, David LaTulippe. This week, conversations with artistic director and conductor Martin Segalka about the new San Francisco Wind Ensemble. Taylor Jordan, who is on the ensemble's board and plays clarinet with the ensemble, is also here. Greg McKellen, who is directing the new 42nd Street Moon production of the Rodgers and Hart treasure I Married an Angel, comes back to KLW to talk about that, here with featured actor Sean Thompson. Plus, conductor Michael Morgan reflects on the 25th anniversary season of the Oakland East Bay Symphony. And critic Joshua Cosman will stop by to offer his classical picks for the month of November. Stay with us. Music of British composer Gustav Holst opens this first segment of the show. It's music that will be heard next Saturday, the 16th of November, out at San Francisco State to be formed by the San Francisco Wind Ensemble. Dr. Martin Segalka is a member of the music faculty at the School of Music and Dance at San Francisco State University. He serves as director of wind ensembles, conducting the FSSU Wind Ensemble and Chamber Winds, leads the Master of Music program in wind conducting, and teaches undergrad classes in conducting as well. He's also a member of the conducting faculty at the Performing Arts Institute at Wyoming Seminary and the SUNY Fredonia Summer Music Festival. In addition to his San Francisco State duties, he is the artistic director and conductor of the San Francisco Wind Ensemble, a professional-level wind ensemble new to the Bay Area, and it is in that capacity that we welcome him in conversation today. Dr. Segalka, welcome to KLW.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Joining in that conversation is Taylor Jordan, who is clarinetist with the San Francisco Wind Ensemble, who also serves on the board of directors. Taylor received his music cred from UCLA and also plays with the San Francisco Sinfonietta Orchestra. Taylor, welcome to you.
Welcome. Good afternoon. Thank you.
Sure. Nice to have you guys. Martin, I'm wondering if you could start with us today to explain to our audience the difference between a band and a wind ensemble.
Gladly. The wind ensemble is basically derived from the tradition that Fred Fennell started at the famous Eastman School of Music. And it was in the early 1950s when he had this idea to say, well, the symphony band, as we know band nowadays and as it was then, is large and it has multiple doublings of instruments in it. And he wanted to try a very different approach, which was essentially a one player per part approach, meaning he essentially took a symphony orchestra wind section, augmented it by the auxiliary instruments such as bass clarinet or E-flat clarinet, contrabass clarinet, as well as, you know, for the bassoons, same thing, you know, adding the contrabassoon and so on and so on, adding a saxophone section, adding euphoniums, and other than that, keep it essentially intact as a symphony orchestra, one player per part wind section, and then perform some of the standard repertoire, and then really started from then on commissioning composers to write for this particular instrumentation.
So definitely not what you'd hear on the football fields of throughout this fair country as a marching band by any means. It's more a level where there's some very concentrated playing going on.
Absolutely. It's a very different approach. We don't usually move. We're not usually playing outside. It's more of a concert hall kind of approach.
There's lots of fingers moving, though, with this repertoire is very challenging stuff.
You could say that. And that is exactly the mission of the San Francisco Wind Ensemble as we compare probably to your average high school band that you hear in either parades or in their indoor concerts, or even a collegiate ensemble, for that matter, of an average college, where this particular ensemble, comprised by wonderful professional players in the Bay Area really is, you know, a pool of talent. And our mission is really to bring music to Bay Area audiences that is not necessarily available just by the technical restraints of your high school or collegiate ensembles in the area, but that is clearly above and beyond what you would expect at a regular band concert.
Well, you're also fortunate to be drawing on the talents of San Francisco State University, students and faculty, I imagine, that are of a higher quality to act as your initial pool of talent.
Actually, to be quite frank, there is only very little overlap. We do have a couple of faculty members with us, and we actually have one student right now who's an exceptionally talented English horn player. But overall, we keep those ensembles really separated. We have the SFSU Wind Ensemble for the students, and it's a very, very thriving program. It's a very good experience there. But then at the professional level, really clearly a step up from there is what we're doing with the professional players for the SF Wind Ensemble.
So you saw a real need for a professional wind ensemble here in the Bay Area. There's no such entity at this point. When was this founded?
That's correct. We actually only founded ourselves a year ago. We just started our second season and actually had a wonderful season opener with Mark Scatterday from the Eastman Wind Ensemble, the current director. He came out and guest conducted our first concert of the season. But this is, like I said, only our second season. And the need is really there. In fact, across the nation, across the world, if you want, the need is there for more professional wind ensembles outside of the military. Obviously, the military is doing a great job and they have wonderful service bands and you know, they serve a specific need in that area. But when it comes to professional instrumentalists out there and the great literature that is available to them, we often find the discrepancy that, you know, somehow the literature is not being played and those wonderful players aren't necessarily engaging in this type of activity. There's, for instance, the Dallas Wind Symphony, and they are probably our big role model, if you want to call them that. They started in their very beginnings as, you know, just a bunch of music teachers of the area who said, you know what, let's keep our playing chops up and let's just, you know, read through really, really awesome literature. And that's how it got started. And it became this full-fledged season of professional wind ensemble playing at one of the beautiful concert halls in the area. And we said, well, there's one shining example. Why shouldn't we do it, especially here in the Bay Area, where, as you said, there is such a large talent pool with so many interesting players, and so far it's working out.
Right. I have to give full confession here as being a proud bandsman myself, having grown up in Connecticut through a public schools program and been involved in band and wind ensembles throughout my early life, and it's just an amazing thing to behold. I went to Ithaca College. Tremendous wind program there. Mm-hmm. Karel Husa also taught and composed for the ensembles there. Now, I noticed you did mention the military band, and there's really the U.S. military bands are doing a lot in this kind of outreach. Mm-hmm. You yourself served in the German Marine Band.
Correct.
But you have a degree in geography. So what? how did all this fit together? How did you come to music?
Oh, boy, I'm going to try and keep this as short as possible here as an answer. My goal was always to make music, and my goal was always to become a conductor. And growing up in Germany, the natural step in that direction was to become a professional symphony orchestra conductor, which is what I did. I had my own opera company in Germany, guest conducted plenty of, you know, professional orchestras, was Christoph Eschenbach's assistant for a year when he was still with the Hamburg Radio Symphony.
Fantastic.
At that time. It was a really great time. But on the other hand, academia kind of roped me in. It was through a sabbatical replacement that I first started teaching at the university and really, really appreciating student musicians. So then through that route, you know, I found my way into the University of Bremen first. Then the position was small enough to never really be tenure track. And as you know, as an adjunct, eventually, if you want to support your family and everything else, then you conclude, well, I should probably do something else in addition. And then opportunities came about here in the United States, first at the State University of New York, then at the Eastman School of Music, where I taught 2 years while finishing my doctorate there, which was a wonderful opportunity.
Fantastic. And Eastman, such a tremendous center for band repertoire.
And that's exactly. And that's really where it hit home with me, where it really happened that, you know, being the assistant conductor of the Eastman Wind Ensemble was such a tremendous experience. I was sold. And growing up in a community band in Germany, the roots had already been laid. And again, with a marine band too, I never really felt detached from the scene. But, you know, in terms of professional achievement, I didn't really see a career for me there in Germany. And that opportunity came about here in the United States. And I'm very thankful would happen.
And so how did San Francisco woo you out here?
They had a job opening. In fact, I was at that time employed and tenured and department chair at the University of Minnesota in Morris. And to be frank, that department chair thing just had a little bit too much desk work and not enough fun work on the podium for me. And I knew I could only escape that if I found a different position. Well, and San Francisco State University was open and they courted me. And here I am. And I'm very, very thankful that this worked out.
That's great. You know, the great composer Darius Milhaud taught for many years at Mills College. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, the only thing he couldn't stand about being at Mills College was the faculty meetings. So I'm sure there's a lot of that going around in academia.
Well, I shouldn't be saying this live on the radio, but the faculty meeting is going on right now. They are always Thursdays, 12:30 till 2. So I sent my chair an apologetic email.
Well, I will be happy to offer you an out again sometime to come visit again.
No, they're wonderful people. I'm very blessed with some really tremendous colleagues at SF State. So it's really a pleasure to
be there. You covered your tracks. Good. There, Mark. Let's get Taylor Jordan in on the conversation here. Taylor's on the board of this newly formed San Francisco Wind Ensemble. How did you come to music? Did you study music as a child early on? Band programs? What?
You know, I did. I spent a lot of time in wind ensembles through high school, and then as a clarinet performance major at UCLA, I was E-flat clarinetist with that group through my time there. And I was in Los Angeles for a long time, and when I moved up to San Francisco about 3 years ago, I was looking for some higher level groups to play with, and was finding that there was a lack of opportunities for me as a clarinetist that didn't have a lot of musical ties in the Bay Area. And then for me, it was very fortuitous that I came across the San Francisco Wind Ensemble right near its genesis. And so there was an opportunity available still as they were filling positions in the group. And I contacted Martin, and the rest is history with that.
And he roped you into being on the board?
Well, I actually asked if I could be a part of the board because I was so impressed with the group after my first concert. I really wanted to be a part of the group, and I really wanted to help the group grow.
That's great. That's great. And so how often are rehearsals? And we're rehearsing out at SF State.
Rehearsals are, yes, we rehearse at SF State. Rehearsals are bare bones, to say the very least. We have 1 3.5-hour rehearsal the night before our concert. We have a dress rehearsal the day of, and then we perform.
Well, Martin, that's got to be a challenge for on your part. You have to have some pretty strong players to pull that off.
We have fantastic players. Again, it's leading professional players from all over the Bay Area, so we're very blessed with a lot of talent on that end. And at the same time, the only way to make it possible that these highly talented players can be with us in addition to all their other day jobs, a lot of them play with the symphony, with the opera, with the ballet, or with any other leading groups in the Bay Area, or are in the faculty at the conservatory at SF State or other institutions in the Bay Area. So the only way to really for them to make room in their calendars to make this group possible is on a very short-term schedule where we really, like Taylor said, get together on Friday, then have a dress rehearsal in the afternoon on Saturday, and then perform on Saturday, not see one another for a month, and then get back together. We've been very fortunate to build a core of an ensemble members, a core ensemble that keep coming back together each time. And they're starting to get to know one another. They're starting to know one's tendencies and intonation and phrasing and things like that. So we're really growing together as an ensemble now.
Sure, and especially when it comes to intonation and parts, you really do, with one person on a part, it's very different than a larger ensemble, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
So you're about a year old or so. Mm-hmm. Where do you see this going? Would you like to have a full series going, a subscription series, or to be outreaching in different areas? What's happening in your roadmap, your five-year plan?
The five-year plan, the 10-year plan, all the plans. Well, we have our series set. We give four concerts a season, so that's what we call our season, our four concerts that currently we perform at SF State. We're very interested in growing and making this a real subscription and you know, potentially in the future, you know, playing in other venues, doing some outreach, working with composers, working with local schools. At this point, we've had a wonderful success actually building our audience through a program where we offer free tickets for music educators and all of their students. So if any of the band directors are listening right now, or orchestra directors or choir directors for that matter, and just want to bring their students, please come. We will offer you free admission attention to any of our concerts, just to, you know, build an audience base and you know, create more excitement for this type of high-level wind music making in the Bay Area.
That's Martin Segalka. He'll be conducting the San Francisco Wind Ensemble next Saturday at 7:30 out at San Francisco State in Knuth Hall. You can find out information about the ensemble at sfwindensemble.org. Taylor Jordan playing clarinet and a board member of the ensemble. Gentlemen, there's a also on the program, we heard some Gustav Holst earlier, is a composer by the name of Maslanka. Very unfamiliar with this composer, David Maslanka.
He is probably one of the most prominent wind ensemble conductors out there here in the United States that are... he is one of the few who are really treating the wind ensemble as a meritorious medium, really not writing down to it or looking down upon it as one of those educational kind of little, you know, belittled medium type things. But he is writing serious music as he hears it. And if he then just chooses to not use strings, there he goes. And as you see, as you look at his large symphonies, for instance, you will see some of them, very few of them, are actually for symphony orchestra, and they are part of the count. So, for instance, Symphony number 6 is for symphony orchestra, but pardon me, number 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, and 9 are all for wind ensemble. So just to give you a perspective as to, you know, how large his output is and how seriously he treats the wind ensemble. And again, his colors are amazing. It's probably some of the technically and musically most challenging music that is out there. And again, fits right into the mission of what we're trying to do.
The work you're doing is called A Child's Garden of Dreams by David Maslanka. Tell us about that piece. Mm-hmm.
It is one of the earliest works that Maslanka has composed, and it consists of 5 movements. Each movement depicts a dream of a young girl who she was terminally ill, and in her therapy process, she worked with somebody who was, you know, skilled in Freudian dream analyses. And these dreams, let's just say they're not your kind of happy dream that you would wish for, but some of them are pretty explicit and pretty harsh. I mean, there's one of them features imagery of a horde of small, creepy animals, and they grow to tremendous size, and at the end, one of them devours the little dreamer.
You know, nice.
Exactly. Okay. Type of dream. So Maslanka was very impressed by that. It was a friend of his whose daughter actually, you know, was eventually dying and had those dreams.
Sorry.
And he was very impressed by it, and eventually put 5 of the most vivid dreams into music.
Oh, it's a cross between Kafka and Grimm, it sounds like.
A little bit, absolutely.
Wow, it sounds very dramatic.
It is, and I think the music, again, it's very emotional. It's incredibly beautiful in passages. It's very intense in other passages. Like I said, musically, emotionally, and technically highly challenging, and really we're very excited with the SF Wind Ensemble to be able to do that.
Well, let's hear just a little bit of David Maslanka's A Child's Garden of Dreams. We're going to hear the first movement of it. Could you set it up for us just a little bit?
Absolutely. It starts very softly, just with a little bit of marimba atmosphere. The first couple of woodwinds come in just matching this one pitch that's just floating a little while. And then a beautiful fanfare comes in. Trumpets, trombones will be heard. And this movement, too, kind of grows in size. It's not a horde of small animals. It's a third movement. But it's a beautiful, majestic opening for the 5-movement suite.
Okay, with that, I will thank you, Martin Segalka and Taylor Jordan, for stopping by today. We'll hear a little bit of David Maslanka as we say goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
from A Child's Garden of Dreams, David Maslanka's work. Also on the program, Gustav Holst's Second Suite in F. You'll hear the San Francisco Wind Ensemble performing that a week from Saturday, November 16th at 7:30. Information at sfwindensemble.org. Still to come, Joshua Cosman gives us his classical music picks ahead. We'll hear about I Married an Angel at 42nd Street Moon and a visit with Michael Morgan of the Oakland East Bay Symphony.
Thou swell, thou witty, thou sweet, thou grand, wouldst kiss me pretty, wouldst hold my hand. Both thine eyes are cute too, what they do to me. Hear me holler, I choose a sweet Lollapalooza in thee. We'd be so sweet in a hut for two. Two rooms and kitchen, I sure would do. Give me just a plot of not a lot of land. And thou swell, thou witty, thou grand.
Well, before there was Rodgers and Hammerstein of Sound and Sound of Music and Carousel, there was Rodgers and Hart, a partnership that ended only because of the premature death of Lorenz Hart at age 48 in 1943. Lyricist Hart was responsible for bringing cleverness back to Broadway lyrics, going well beyond the rhyming of moon and June, and the Rodgers and Hart partnership resulted in such memorable contributions to the great American songbook as the tune we just heard a part of, Thou Swell, the amazing Blossom Deary singing there. The good folks at 42nd Street Moon have brought back a lesser-known gem to the stage in the form of the 1938 musical I Married an Angel, written in the same year as The Boys from Syracuse and 2 years before their reputation-sealing classic, Pal Joey, with such classics as Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered, and I Could Write a Book. Director Greg McKellen and actor Sean Thompson join me in studio to talk about the production at 42nd Street Moon. Gentlemen, welcome to KLW.
Thanks, Dave.
Hi.
I should mention, Greg, welcome back. You've been a guest of Open Air in its previous incarnation with host Alan Farley.
I was, yes.
Happy to have you back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
So, Greg, you must have a bit of a fascination with early Broadway. Is that the mission of 42nd Street Moon in general, or do you have a predilection for Jumbo and I Married an Angel? And
Jumbo. I wish we could think of a way to do Jumbo. Boy, that would be something. The mission of 42nd Street Moon is really to present shows that people don't often get a chance to see, if ever. And I Married an Angel would fall into the if ever category. And I think when we started, we definitely gravitated towards the 20s and 30s, early 40s. We've gone well into the 1970s. And so there's not a particular time period that we, you know, say we can't do shows beyond such a point. In fact, there are even a couple of shows from the late 80s and 90s that I'm starting to think we might get around to. But both Stephanie Rhodes, who founded the company with me, and I do have a predilection for those shows of the 20s and the 30s, and Rodgers and Hart, Kern and Berlin, and Cole Porter, of course. So we do gravitate there as often as we can, because the music is just so amazing.
So how was opening weekend of I Married an Angel? You opened last week.
We did, and it went very well. We had great houses and who were very appreciative of the show. It's the famous song is Spring Is Here, and also I'll Tell the Man in the Street, and the title song somewhat too. And when it's the kind of show that when people see it and they think, oh, I didn't know that that song was from a show or that it fit into a script a particular way. So that's always fun when they hear famous songs that they had no idea came from a musical or had a genesis in a show.
So, Sean, you've got some Rodgers and Hammerstein under your belt in the form of Oklahoma, a little Lerner and Lowe in the form of Camelot, and some Lloyd Webber and Joseph and the Amazing Dreamcoat. But early Rodgers and Hart, now, what experience do you have with earlier Broadway?
I don't think that I do. I think this is the first show that I've done that comes from before Oklahoma. So it's nice to be experiencing that, for sure. It's fun to see what shows were like before Oklahoma, because as they say, Oklahoma changed musical theater history. To see a kind of script that was built for the songs as opposed to a script built before the songs, which is what you have after Oklahoma for the most part.
Hmm. So what brought you out to San Francisco? You're a Midwest
42nd
boy.
Street Moon.
Okay. Great.
No, I'm from Philadelphia, actually. Okay. Yeah. I came out here first to work with 42nd Street Moon on the show.
Very nice. And you're this lead role in this character. Tell us about the lead character in I Married an Angel.
Well, he is a banker, some might call him a playboy. He's a count in Budapest, Hungary, 1938, like we said, who is sort of down on women at this point. He has an idealistic view of what a woman should be like and what his eventual spouse should be like. And he's been let down time and time again by women who of the time who, I guess, seem more into the materialistic things. So, yeah, he's, like, too idealistic for his own good, and eventually says in the show that he will only marry an angel that comes down from heaven to marry him. That's the only way he'll marry a woman.
But there turns out to be complications with that angel, aren't there?
Right. So he does meet the woman of his dreams, and she is an angel. But being an angel, she doesn't know the ways of humankind, the little lies that we tell to make situations a little easier to deal with and things like that. She doesn't know how to lie. She's just a pure, innocent kind of being.
Unfiltered.
So it doesn't really mesh well with a banker who sometimes has to bend the truth here and there to have good business done.
Greg, are you setting this in a contemporary setting or is it a period piece? How are you working this?
No, we always do the shows. You know, I mean, this was a contemporary show when it opened, but we're doing it in the late 1930s, and it takes place in Budapest, Hungary. And you know, how often do you get to do a musical that's set in Budapest?
True enough.
We don't update shows to a contemporary time. We do them in the period that they're supposed to be. I think it's really cool when people do that. And it's just not what we do. But I think there have been some really cool adaptations that have updated some things, but we haven't.
Mm-hmm. And how is the production presented musically?
We have our amazing musical director, Dave Dabrowski, who's also our resident musical director, who is an orchestra on the piano, and we have a woodwind player, Nick DiScala. And they amazingly managed to sound pretty much like an orchestra, you know, even though there are only two pieces. Dave sometimes by himself can sound like an orchestra. Mm-hmm. So we're really lucky to have both of them.
And tell us about the rest of your cast then.
Well, we have, you know, it's interesting. We have four people in the show who've done shows with us before, including Bill Farner, who is an actor who was with us from the very beginning, 20 some odd years ago. But the rest of the cast this is their first time with Moon, such as Sean. And we have Allison Rich and Halsey Verity and Nathaniel Rothrock, and Carrie Yancey is playing the angel. And a lot of, you know, the Bay Area has so many wonderful, wonderfully talented musical theater performers. And I feel like between Superman and this show and Snoopy, which is coming next, we've managed to get almost everybody there is, except for all the men who had to go do 1776 at ECT.
Right.
So, we have a great cast of local people.
And Sean, not only making your debut with 42nd Street Moon, but a San Francisco debut for you here.
West Coast.
Mm-hmm. Play it all you can. West Coast, first. Very nice.
It's nice to be here, for sure.
And he'll be back with us in the spring, and then he has some other gigs already in the Bay Area?
Sure. What's going on? Tell us about.
Well, I'll be doing Painting the Clouds with Sunshine, which is a new musical written by Greg with 42nd Street Moon in the spring. And then I'll be doing a production of Into the Woods, the Stephen Sondheim musical.
Oh, terrific.
With the San Francisco Playhouse in
Excellent.
The summer.
Excellent. Oh, that's super.
Yeah.
Super. Well, we don't have quite the memorable hits out of I'm Married an Angel like Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. But we do have the title track, I believe, I'm Married an Angel, mm-hmm. which is a tune that you'll be singing, right?
I do sing that,
you
yep.
sing? Well, we're going to hear Frankie Lane sing it here, I believe. And it's going to be heard, sung by Sean Thompson at 42nd Street Moon. They opened last weekend and run through November 17th. Information at 42nd Street Moon, 42ND Street, 42ndstreetmoon.org. For tickets if you're interested in catching the show. Gentlemen, I wish you a fantastic run, and thanks for taking some time today.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, David.
There's been a change in me. I have a lovely disposition that's very strange in me. And life's as sweet as it can be. I've lots of courage and ambition. From every care my mind is free. So I repeat with your permission. There's been a change in me. Have you heard? She is sweet and gentle, so it isn't strange when I'm sentimental. She loves me like an angel. Now you've heard I'm married an angel. This beautiful change you'll be awfully good for me.
Ah, yes, rhyming angel with changel, it could only be Lorenz Hart. The Rodgers and Hart musical, I Married an Angel at 42nd Street Moon through November 17th. We just heard Frankie Lane singing the title track. You'll hear Sean Thompson in his West Coast debut singing that tune, among others, in I Married an Angel. The opening concert of the 25th season of the Oakland East Bay Symphony gets underway tomorrow evening at the Paramount Theater on Broadway in Oakland. Information at oebs.org. On the program, music of Wagner, Mason Bates, Giuseppe Verdi, and Aaron Copland. Here to join me to talk about this, as well as the rest of the season of the Oakland East Bay Symphony, once again, happy to welcome to our studios Mr. Maestro Michael Morgan of the Oakland East Bay Symphony. Hi, Michael.
Hi, nice to be here.
So this opening concert includes works by Wagner, Bates, and Verdi, and Copland. Now, Copland's Appalachian Spring. I know you worked with Lenny Bernstein. Did you have any opportunity to work with Aaron Copland directly?
Never worked with Copland. I met him once, I think, at, where was I? Someplace he conducted, but I mean, not when he conducted, because he was beyond that when I met him, but I only met him in passing, and it was he was not in the best health then. So the reason actually Appalachian Spring is on the program is because it's literally the first piece I did as music director at Oakland.
And you've been with them for 24 of those 25 years. Wow.
We always get a double anniversary because whatever the orchestra's anniversary is, the next year, it's my anniversary of the same year. So 25 for the orchestra this year, 25 for me next year.
Have you ever heard Copland tell the story of Appalachian Spring?
I think I've seen that on film, yes.
Yeah, that it was originally entitled Ballet for Martha. He wrote the music and called it Ballet for Martha, and how I believe after a performance of Appalachian Spring, some woman came up to him in the audience and said, "Oh, Mr. Copland, when I hear that music, I just see the mountains and feel the water." I said, "Well, actually, I originally called it Ballet for Martha. It had nothing to do with Appalachian Spring, but people think of it now. It's so iconic."
Yeah, I think it's actually the most American piece in the standard repertory, which is why I started my tenure with it.
And the rest, let's talk about the rest of that program then.
Well, Mason Bates is the next thing on the program, Mothership. And we were the first professional orchestra to play Mason Bates when he was still finishing up as a grad student or something at Cal Berkeley. He was brought to my attention by some mutual friends at International House at Berkeley. And we played one of his pieces way, way back. And now, of course, he's a star of everywhere. There probably isn't anyone that's more successful right now. So we're quite happy to have been there at the beginning.
And also some classic scenes from opera, including the Overture de la Forza del Destino.
Well, Verdi. You have to do something for the Verdi and Wagner bicentennial. You can't just let those go by.
True enough, yeah. I forgot it was Wagner's anniversary as well.
Both bicentennial, yes. Okay. So we do the Forza Overture and Ritorna Vincitor from Aida, and that's with Offaly Graham singing. Mm-hmm. And then we do the Rhine Journey and the Immolation scene, then also with Offaly singing.
Some light music to going out with a bang, or
but
at least
actually,
with fire.
For us, because we tend to, you know, we don't play that many concerts during the year, and we tend to pack a whole lot of music onto every concert. This is actually kind of a short one. It's people will be looking at their watches going, this is really the Oakland East Bay Symphony? We're out before midnight. This is nice.
Well, it's interesting that it's the 25th anniversary, because just recently, our own Folk Music and Beyond with Joanne Marr celebrated 25 years on the air. And just last week, the BBC NewsHour as a program has just been in existence for 25 years.
So you see a lot of things started that
some
year.
Good company,
yes.
I think. Well, let's talk about the rest of this anniversary season. What special have you got planned?
Well, I think always our Notes From series. We stop in a different country each year on our Notes From. This year it's Notes From India, including the first of the Ravi Shankar sitar concertos. And it's the Notes From series. We've done Persia. We've done Persia twice, actually. We've done the Philippines. We've done China. We've done Armenia. And what we do in that series is, in addition to focusing on what's been some very interesting music, is that we also focus on a community. It's always based on the idea that there's a community of people that comes along with this music. So our task this year will be to make inroads and new connections in the Indian community.
Well, interestingly, on that program, in addition to the concerto of Ravi Shankar, Philip Glass's and Ravi Shankar's excerpts from Passages, and a world premiere by Juhi Bansal.
Yes, and she is in Southern California, composer of Indian descent, and she's writing a new piece for us that is being sponsored by the Irvine Foundation.
But why Beethoven 7th on that program?
Every Notes From program has an absolutely standard repertory work on it, because if you're going to bring new people into the hall, you should do something that an orchestra normally does in the hopes that you will. It's not that we expect everybody at series to all of a sudden become subscribers. All that would be great. But the idea is that we make a few new friends and we bring them along as part of our Oakland East Bay Symphony family. So, for example, one of the Notes From Armenia concert had Mozart. Last year's Notes From the Middle East concert had the Grieg Piano Concerto. Even the Notes From Persia concert had the Beethoven Triple Concerto, but all Persian soloists. So we always make sure that there's something from the absolutely standard repertory on every Notes From concert.
Notes From India will be happening on Friday, March 28th, a finale season, season finale of the Berlioz Requiem. That's a big piece, boy.
It's a big piece. And I have to say, at this point, where we're now in, going into November, we have not by any means solved the logistical issue of how to fit all of those people into the Paramount Theater. We're going to have to extend the stage some. Mm. We haven't decided how much, and we're going to have to, in addition to extending the stage, probably take out the shell, because the thing is just going to expand beyond, you know, what the shell will contain. Mm. So we have some logistical issues, because it's not just the symphony. It's also the youth orchestra and, of course, our symphony chorus. And we'll probably be joined by some guests, because our symphony chorus is large but not large enough for the Berlioz Requiem, so we'll probably have some additional people join us.
Well, let's talk about that orchestration of Berlioz. Is he expanding the orchestra as he is wont to do on some of his works like Fantastique? And
well, this is the Requiem is beyond all. I mean, there's eight pairs of timpani in the Berlioz Requiem. Everything is in fours and eights and just huge numbers of instrumentalists. Although, surprisingly, actually, for all the spectacle and the gigantic noise that the piece creates, it's technically not that difficult a piece to play for the orchestra, which is why you can include, you know, we can include our youth orchestra in it, because it is playable by them. Hmm. Also, it's not nearly as difficult as, say, Symphonie Fantastique.
And Berlioz, the master orchestrator, is using those numbers of instruments, not necessarily just for the bombast. I mean, he has five pairs of cymbals, but he likes to hear them just barely touched together.
That's my favorite point in the Berlioz writ large, is when you have, in fact, you know, five sets of cymbals being played pianissimo, which is a very different sound than one pair being played pianissimo. Mm. So his special effects are large numbers of people playing softly. It's a very different sound than a small number of people also playing softly.
Mm-hmm. So 24 out of the 25 years with the Oakland East Bay Symphony, what is the secret to this marriage?
I guess it's, I think the thing about for a conductor is, if the conductor is a good match for the city he or she is in, then chances are the marriage, as it were, will go on for a while. I mean, here in San Francisco, of course, you have a very good example of that, a conductor in Michael Tilson Thomas, who's a very good match for the city. And so it's been a successful relationship for a long time. And I certainly feel more at home in Oakland than I do pretty much anywhere else. And I have to say also that the orchestra is a very adventurous group of people. They like the experimentation. They like they are very flexible. I mean, we've done things like I remember when we did the Ellington Harlem, and the orchestra suddenly sounded like the world's largest jazz band. Mm. So they are very flexible people. And
we also did those wonderful performances of the Bernstein Mass. That was a massive undertaking.
We always look back on that as really a very, for most people, the high point of the 25 years was the Bernstein Mass. And the flexibility of these players is just incredible. And their dedication not only to the music but to the mission of the orchestra, because the mission of the orchestra is very much community driven, very much education driven. It's very much about sharing what we have and can do with our community, and in a very specific to the people who live right around us sort of way. That is to say, we're not aiming what we do at a larger national or international audience. We want the people right around us to enjoy and be a part of what we're doing.
Nor are you looking at just the concert experience as being that ultimate experience. You're involving the community. I understand that a lot of your budget is involved in the education aspect of involving your community.
Right. A third of our budget goes back into education and community engagement, because that is what Oakland, California needs. And also, the other thing that we do, this programming, the Notes from India was a perfect example, you know, why the Beethoven 7th in the middle of a Notes from India concert. Not only do we want to engage a new community, but we want to, as it were, add the new community to our existing community and have people come and sit together and watch a concert. So one hopes that the adventurous fans of the Beethoven Seventh will come and hear the music from India, and then the fans of the music from India will sit with the so-called classical audience and listen to the Beethoven Seventh.
Other concert programs that you've put together over these 24 years that really stand out to you? What's another?
Well,
highlight?
I loved doing, besides the Bernstein Mass, I loved doing Follies of Stephen Sondheim. Mm. That was a very much a favorite. And another very much favorite piece for me that's coming back next year in my 25th year is the Mendelssohn Elijah, which is just, I think, one of Earth's great pieces. I think a lot of the greatest music ever written requires not just an orchestra, but someone has to sing. And so a lot of my favorite experiences have been with chorus and vocal soloists and that sort of thing.
Are you looking forward to perhaps going more along the lines of some spectacle, along the lines of Follies or the Mass, anything down the road that you'd really like to see?
Well, we hope so. We hope to get back to, because there's more Sondheim we'd like to do. We'd like to actually have some things written for us. And we'll talk about that in a moment in regards to one of the concerts we're doing this year. But we're just basically waiting like everyone else for what passes for an economy to turn around, because doing these big theatrical, these big musical theater works is very expensive. And so we're trying to get to be on a little bit more solid footing just in the whole world economy before we start back in on those.
Well, share with us some of the music that's being written for the Oakland East Bay.
Well, this year on our, I believe it's the February concert, we're doing some songs by a local composer named Mary Fineman. Now, I heard her, actually I got to know her brother, who was very helpful to us in some of our fundraising for our education programs. And introduced me to her, and I thought she was a very gifted songwriter. And what I want to do is to make this the beginning of a series of commissions where we commission people to write and orchestrate songs for Broadway or jazz-type singer and orchestra in the tradition of the old German orchestra leader. That is, that they are conceived as pieces for orchestra or expanded into pieces that include orchestra. And I'd like to roll out a series of these. And I've had a lovely conversation in New York last year with Stephen Schwartz about the fact that he would like to do something like this if he's ever, far enough between massive projects, because he goes from massive project to massive project. But he was very intrigued by this idea. When I first said, why don't you write something for orchestra? He thought I meant just an orchestral piece. And you could see that he wasn't really... didn't really interest him all that much. And then when I said, actually, no, I'm looking for things for the Broadway-type singer and orchestra, not opera singer, Broadway-type singer and orchestra, and he just lit up. So I'm hoping there will be more of that. So I'm approaching singer-songwriters, and I have a couple of dream catches I'm hoping to make contact with someday.
All right, well, we'll look forward to 26 and beyond. Again, the Mary Fineman songs orchestrated will be heard on the February 21st concert. Information about the full season of the Oakland East Bay Symphony is at oebs.org. Michael, we wish you at least another 25 more.
I'm going to be pretty old by then, but okay.
If you haven't heard the Oakland East Bay Symphony, treat yourself. Their 25th anniversary season opens tomorrow evening at the Paramount. OEBS.org for more information. Michael, thanks for taking some time today.
Thank you. Always wonderful to come here. Thank you.
and just a touch of Aaron Copland to be heard by the Oakland East Bay Symphony in their opening of their 25th season concert, oebs.org. A perfect setup to our final segment this week with Joshua Cosman, who profiled Michael Morgan in this past Sunday's Datebook. If you didn't get a chance to review your pink pages, a very nice article.
Thank you.
But the month of November includes a lot more than the Oakland East Bay Symphony and my guests today. You've got a whole chock full list of some classical picks.
It's true. It's going to be a very busy month for anybody with an interest in classical music. In addition to the OEBS concert, which will be tomorrow night that you just talked about, the San Francisco Opera is going to have its last full, its last new production of the season. This is going to be a new production of Rossini's great comedy, The Barber of Seville. And as they've been doing in the last couple seasons, they're going to be presenting it in two different casts in alternation, one after another. So opening night on November 13th is going to be a cast with baritone Lucas Meacham, who's a former Adler Fellow and Merlino, I suppose, who came into his own a couple years ago with a wonderful performance of Don Giovanni. We're going to have mezzo-soprano Isabel Leonard, who is making her first San Francisco Opera debut, San Francisco Opera performance. I'm very much looking forward to hearing this. She did a small part in the San Francisco Symphony's performances last month of excerpts from Thomas Addis's opera, The Tempest, and was just a knockout. So I'm looking forward to that. And along with that is going to be the company debut of a singer I don't know, a Mexican tenor named Javier Camarena, as Count Almaviva. That's the one cast. And then the next night on November 14th, we have a completely different cast, a Norwegian baritone named Odun Iversen as Figaro. Daniela Mack, another former Marilena and Adler Fellow as Rosina, and Alex Schrader, also a product of the company's training program as Count Almaviva. This is a new production that's directed by Emilio Saggi and has Giuseppe Finzi, who's been the sort of right-hand man to music director Nicola Luizzotti. He will be conducting.
New production meaning newly staged contemporary setting? How are they setting it, you know?
Do not know. Going to find out.
Okay, but a great way to go out for, can't go wrong with the Barber of Seville.
You can't go wrong with
the Barber. It's really hard to hurt the Barber of
Seville. That's true.
Information at sfopera.com.
Right. The second night of that second opening night that I just mentioned, November 14th, is unfortunately for me opposite a concert that I really would have loved to have heard by the San Francisco Contemporary Music Players at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. They're going to do Lumber, which is a piece by the New York composer Michael Gordon, one of the founders and artistic directors of the great Bang on a Can Festival. This is a piece for six percussionists playing amplified blocks of wood in a kind of a rhythmic and theatrical tour de force that is based on music of Eastern Orthodox monks.
Wow.
I know. And that's on the program also with a piece by a composer I don't know named Elena Langer, two cat songs sung by local soprano Amy Foote. That's going to be at YBC on November 14th.
And information about the San Francisco Contemporary Music Players at sfcmp.org.
That's right. And then later that week, also on the contemporary music front, on November 17th, the Sunday, at Craneway Pavilion in Richmond, the Other Minds Festival is going to present the West Coast premiere of, yes, a lot of guitars, 100 electric guitars all in one place, playing A Secret Rose, which is a big piece by the formerly New York, now Paris-based composer, Reese Chatham, whom I also just wrote about for the pink section, but it hasn't appeared yet. Reese Chatham is known to new music aficionados as being the first music director of The Kitchen, the downtown New York performance space, which he started doing at the age of 19. And he's got a kind of an aesthetic that combines punk rock and early minimalist. So we've got 100 electric guitars in big groups, three groups, and
I'm glad it's being billed as minimalist, though. 100 electric guitars.
It is. He says, there's nothing like 100 electric guitars playing very softly. This is his promise to us.
There you go. Okay, information about that, spectacular, is at otherminds.org.
Exactly. Also this weekend, the Dutch cellist Peter Wispelwey will be in town doing all six of the Bach cello suites in two back-to-back recitals at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in San Francisco. He's going to do the first three at 2 p.m. Sort of as an opener, and then the big heavy lifting of the 4, 5, and 6 suites at 7:30 p.m.
Well, let's let you catch your breath, and we'll hear a little bit of Peter Wispelwey's playing some Bach.
There we go.
Touch of Peter Wispelwey playing some Bach, that concert this Saturday through SF Performances. Information at performances.org. Joshua Cosman joining me, David LaTulippe. He's caught his breath and but has more for us.
I just want to add, if you're interested in hearing Peter Wispelwey, don't waste time. I've been told that the tickets are very nearly sold out. So anybody who wants to hear that has to move fast.
There we go. What else you got?
Philharmonia Baroque Orchestra, which will have a very interesting program this month with a guest conductor, Stephen Fox. He's got a program of music from Imperial St. Petersburg, which is to say Russian composers of the 18th and early 19th centuries. Now, you know about these people because you're that kind of guy, but we're talking about people like Dmitri Bortnianski and Maxim Berezovsky.
Never heard of these guys.
I know. And a guy named Johann Fossius, who is unknown to the editors of the New Grove Dictionary, and I know because I tried to find out something about him. But he's got a cello concerto, which Tanya Tompkins, this great local early music cellist, is going to give what seems to be the modern premiere of this piece. So we will find out what is going on in Catherine the Great's imperial court. And that's going to be a series of concerts November 15th through the 19th in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Atherton.
And information about the Philharmonia Baroque at philharmonia.org or philharmoniabaroque.org.
They have both websites, and they're interchangeable. It just depends on how much typing you feel like doing. Getting towards the end of the month, I want to just flag a really terrific-looking recital by the Israeli-born pianist Shai Wozner, who's coming to Berkeley on November 24th, thanks to Cal Performances, with a program of music by Schubert and about Schubert. There's going to be some Schubert sonatas and shorter pieces on the program, and also music by the composer Jörg Widmann, who's a wonderful young German composer who's become very prominent lately and whose music I'm very excited about. He's got a piece called Idyll and Abyss, Six Schubert Reminiscences. So it'll be one of these kind of past and present dialogues between Schubert and Widmann. And Shai Wozner is a very good pianist and also a very intelligent and thoughtful artist. So I'm looking forward to that on November 24th at Hertz Hall in Berkeley.
Find out more at calperformances.org. The month is ending. I'm glad you have on your pick list the Britain War Requiem. It's an amazing piece of music.
It is, and I know you're a big fan of the piece, and we're all fans of Britain. So this is part of the ongoing Britain Centennial. Britain, of course, born in 1913, and the San Francisco Symphony getting around to it slightly late, but they're going to make up for it by carrying on into 2014 with performances of Peter Grimes and other pieces later in the year. But for now, we're going to do the War Requiem, two performances only, November 27th, which is, of course, era of Thanksgiving, and November 30th at Davies Symphony Hall with Semyon Bychkov conducting and soprano Christine Brewer, tenor James Gilchrist, and baritone Roderick Williams as the vocal soloists.
I'd be remiss if I didn't say that the Britain War Requiem is my song. My partner and I met at the Britain War Requiem at the New York Philharmonic with Rostropovich conducting, and Vishnakaya is one of the soloists.
Wonderful. Well, that's
some 26 years ago. So we have a special
That's a good dance to special, that's a good music to yes.
Special spot in our heart for that.
Wonderful.
Joshua, thanks for your picks for the month of November. It sounds like you got a busy dance.
I will be very busy, yes indeed, and looking forward to it. Thanks for having me, David.
And we'll look forward to next month's picks as well. Thanks to Neil Swinkles, my producer for Open Air, for getting our parade of guests in and out and comfortable here in the KLW studios. And I invite you to join me for Explorations in Music this coming Monday at 9 p.m. We continue our exploration with Alexander String Quartet and Robert Greenberg for this series exploring the string quartet in a time of war. It's Explorations in Music on Mondays at 9 p.m. in November and December. Information about our program and past shows at KALW.org. I'm David LaTulipe. Thanks for listening.